The NBA starts its season, and the Celtics have a new-look team and a budding rivalry with one of the most famous names in the game. It's Tuesday, October 17th, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. The NBA season gets underway Tuesday night, and the Celtics begin it in Cleveland against LeBron James and the Cavaliers. It's a much-anticipated opener. The Celtics remade their roster and reinvented themselves in the offseason. They signed free agent Gordon Hayward, and they traded for Kyrie Irving, who previously played for the Cavaliers. It was a rare trade between heated rivals. The blockbuster deal, which sent Boston fan favorite Isaiah Thomas to Cleveland, created one of the most compelling storylines of the NBA season, and maybe some bad blood with Kyrie Irving's former teammates. The trade has intertwined the seasons of the Celtics and Cavaliers, putting the two teams and their stars on a collision course in the Eastern Conference. Joining me now to help break this down is Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports and The Vertical. He's also the host of The Chris Mannix Show on NBC Sports Radio. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's the mood in Cleveland before this big clash to open the NBA season?
Well, look, there's some anticipation among fans out here of seeing Kyrie Irving and welcoming him back in whatever way they're going to welcome him back. But you know, from the Cavaliers' perspective, this is not as big a deal as it probably is for others. I mean, this Cleveland team has so many internal issues that they've got to figure out. They added 8 new players to the lineup from this past season. They changed 60% of their starting lineup. They have a new point guard that's going to take over, at least until Isaiah Thomas is ready to roll. They're going with a small ball lineup for the first time in a few years. So the Cavaliers have a lot of interest in seeing Kyrie Irving again, and certainly it's going to be an emotionally charged night. But for Cleveland and that team, they're very much focused on how to address their own internal issues to try to make at least one more run at Golden State.
Now, you remember LeBron James, when he came back to Cleveland after he'd ended his first stint with the Cavaliers, decided to go to the Miami Heat. That was a really acrimonious situation. Are you anticipating anything like that tonight, Chris, with Kyrie Irving returning to Quicken Loans Arena?
I don't think it's going to be as nasty as it was for LeBron. I mean, go back to 2010, and they were throwing batteries at the guy. I mean, they had to have extra police surrounding the floor. I read one column where it was said that the mascot actually wore a bulletproof vest. That was as bad as it could possibly get. I mean, Kyrie, it won't be a warm reception, and it certainly got a little bit nastier when people in Cleveland read that he said Boston was a real live sports town. I mean, people out here take their sports very seriously, so that's not something that sat well with them. So we can expect a strong reaction, but he's also going to get a video tribute at some point during the game tonight. So, and that's something LeBron never would have expected back in 2010.
Yeah, you're right. It's an interesting situation, though, with Kyrie. I mean, basically, he's the one who requested the trade and broke up a team that had gone to 3 straight NBA finals. He wanted his own team. He gets his own team here with the Celtics. The expectations for the Celtics, Chris, are sky high. Can they live up to those expectations, and how long will it take?
I think they can, because if you talk to scouts, I mean, each one of them will tell you that Boston right now has the most potent offensive team in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they should routinely put up 100-plus points, and they should be dynamic on that end of the floor. I think Brad Stevens, his ability to maximize the talent of his players, which he's shown over the last 4 years, I think that's going to make it a little bit easier for Kyrie and Gordon Hayward to mesh and to find some chemistry. And look, Kyrie understands he's got to be a little bit of a different player. He doesn't have to change his game entirely, but he can't just be so singularly focused on scoring when he's the face of the franchise. So I expect him to have to tweak his game, but maybe call it blind faith in what Brad Stevens can do and how he's coached this team over the last 4 years. But I think their learning curve won't be as tough as some people think. Plus, even in the games that they struggle in, the Eastern Conference is so bad. Like, there are probably 4 or 5 teams that you can play awfully against and still win. So they'll benefit from just the mediocrity of the teams in their conference.
Yeah, you're right. The Eastern Conference is a little bit of a wasteland. Certainly some teams like Atlanta and Indiana that took a step back. I agree with you, too, on looking at Brad Stevens and his offensive wizardry. You look at what he did with Isaiah Thomas, turned him into an MVP candidate. And if you look at some of these sort of advanced stats that the NBA puts out, last year, Isaiah Thomas led the league in points per possession on pick-and-roll plays as a ball handler. Imagine putting Kyrie Irving with his handle in some of those same situations.
Yeah, look, it's not like they're markedly different players. You know, people have talked about how Kyrie's a ball stopper and how will he fit into Brad Stevens' ball movement type of offense. But you have to remember, when Isaiah got it going, Brad Stevens' favorite play call was basically wave his hand up the court and tell Isaiah to make a play. And if Kyrie Irving has it going, he's going to have the same liberty and the same freedom. And look, he's a better pick-and-roll player than Isaiah Thomas. I think he can be a better three-point shooter in the long term, especially on stand-up threes and opportunities he gets when teams have to double Gordon Hayward. The offensive potential for this team is limitless, and that's why I've long believed that making this deal, you know, was a deal you make 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, it's interesting because when they made the deal, I talked to Celtics co-owner Steve Pagliuca, and I asked him about, you know, them making this deal and obviously giving up Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and really the big thing was the unprotected 2018 Brooklyn pick, a pick a lot of people think, you know, will be in the top five and could be the number one pick. And I said, you know, why do it for this guy, for this player? And Pag said that he thought, you know, Kyrie Irving is a transcendent player and that he's not someone you can look at and say, this is not a player who is not in the class of Steph Curry or James Harden. Now, personally, I don't think he's in that class yet, Chris, but I think the Celtics think he can be in that class in Brad's system.
I don't think he's in that class yet either, and it's an open debate about whether Kyrie Irving can be the number one option on a championship team. But I do think he is an upgrade, even if it's ever so slightly, over Isaiah Thomas. And look, let's be real. The long-term impact here is significant. Kyrie has got two more years on his contract. And when his contract is up, you know, barring any type of injury, Boston won't blink in extending him a max deal. I mean, Isaiah, there were a lot of questions there, even before the hip injury. I don't believe that the Celtics were willing to go into the 4- and 5-year range on a max-level contract for Isaiah. They may have offered him a Kyle Lowry type of deal, which was 3 years, right around $100 million. But I got the sense that the Celtics were reluctant to go that far. They won't be reluctant to go that far with Kyrie Irving, who just kind of fits the sort of prototypical mold of what a point guard should look like. Big, athletic, not a great defensive player, but with the potential to get a little bit better. He makes more sense as a franchise build-around player at this point than Isaiah Thomas did.
Yeah, and I think there's still more there. I think he's still an ascending player. Isaiah, 28 years old, I don't know how much better he can play than he did last year, but you look at Kyrie at 25. Last year he averaged a career-high 25.2 points per game, shot 47% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from the line. I mean, those are elite numbers for a guy that's never really had an offensive coach who can put him in positions where maybe he can get some easier baskets and not always have to create it on his own with his incredible ball handling.
Yeah, I mean, look, Danny Ainge has a pretty accomplished history of selling players high. You know, what he got for KG and Paul Pierce was obviously significant. I mean, getting a first-round pick for a head coach in Doc Rivers that he didn't even want stands as maybe his best move. And now you have IT. And look, if Isaiah's healthy, Cleveland's still the class of the conference. And what should scare the bejesus out of Boston fans is if Isaiah's healthy, he clicks with LeBron, and LeBron surveys the landscape and says, you know what, playing with Isaiah Thomas for the next 3 years is a much more palatable long-term play for me than going to the Lakers or going to the Rockets or some other team. That should be scary because Isaiah is still young enough to give Cleveland 2, 3, 4 more years of playing at a high level.
Yeah, what is the vibe in Cleveland with LeBron? I mean, is this a situation where it's a lame duck year for LeBron and he's going to be with the Lakers next year? Or do the people in Cleveland feel like he will stay or he can be convinced to stay if this team can contend?
Look, I think he can be convinced to stay because, if nothing else, LeBron's pragmatic. And he's not going to go to the Lakers if he doesn't have another superstar with him. That's why there were some ripple effects to Russell Westbrook's contract. Not just with Westbrook being locked into Oklahoma City, but now a heightened possibility that Paul George could elect to stay there long-term as well. And if Paul George stays, where do you look if you're LeBron? Where do you find that second guy to come play with you out in Los Angeles? So I think, you know, the idea that he could stay is certainly not far-fetched at all. But, you know, look, it's impossible to predict what LeBron's going to do. I mean, he, as much as any player I've ever covered, he loves chaos, and he thrives in chaos. The unpredictability, the guessing game that people play with his career, this is right in LeBron's wheelhouse and exactly what he wants, both from, you know, fans and maybe even from other players who might be interested in playing with him as he heads into a free agent year.
Will Isaiah Thomas ever sort of get over this deal? I mean, I know there was a story in Sports Illustrated with Lee Jenkins about how emotional this trade was for him and how deep it hurt him after he really became embedded in the Boston basketball experience. He was saying he'll never talk to Danny Ainge again. Do you believe that, or is that just the emotion of the deal?
Look, I think we're still too close to the deal to make any kind of long-term predictions on Isaiah. Look, he's not mad at anybody but Danny at this point. I mean, he's not going to be upset with the fans in Boston, the coaching staff, anybody. The Celtics, as a staff, as an organization, didn't give up on him. And deep down, I think Isaiah knows, he understands why this deal was done. He probably doesn't agree with it, and I'm sure he doesn't. So I don't imagine he and Danny will ever be best friends singing Kumbaya around the campfire, but I think they'll get over it in the long term.
We've talked so much about Cleveland and the Celtics. Obviously, that's because they're going to start the season, and they're the two favorites in the Eastern Conference. Is there anybody else, Chris? Is there any other team that could come out of sort of nowhere here and end up representing the East in the finals?
Well, I mean, Washington remains maybe the most intriguing team in this bunch. And when you look at the players they have, I mean, it's Wall and Beal, who are still elite at their positions. I was in D.C. recently. Otto Porter, coming off that contract, has looked great in training camp, looks so much more comfortable with the whole contract negotiation off his back. I mean, they're a very good team down there in D.C., and we saw what happened with them taking to Boston 7 games in the conference semifinals. So they, to me, stand as the one team that could upset the apple cart and disrupt the conference finals.
All right, coming up with Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports and The Vertical, we're going to go around the rest of the NBA. There's no shortage of hot topics and storylines for the start of the NBA season. That's next. Welcome back to Season Ticket. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, or if you have an Android phone, you can check us out on Stitcher or Google Play. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports and The Vertical. Let's go around the rest of the NBA, Chris. When you look at the league, there are a lot of players on the move in the offseason, a lot of really interesting player transactions. You had Chris Paul land with the Houston Rockets and leave the Clippers. You had Paul George get traded from the Indiana Pacers to the OKC Thunder. Carmelo Anthony also picked up from the Knicks by OKC, sort of picked up out of the clearance bin. Which team do you think helped themselves the most this offseason in the NBA?
Well, I mean, look, Carmelo, Paul George going to Oklahoma City certainly made the Thunder the most intriguing team of this entire season. You know, they go from a one-star team with a player in Westbrook who had the highest usage rate in NBA history to try to figure out a way to incorporate three players who ranked in the top 20 in usage rate this past season. But their firepower, it's considerable. And they've got three guys now that have a hunger to win that they need to make this whole thing work. I mean, Paul George, when I was out in Oklahoma City, I mean, he talked a lot about how disappointed he was the last couple of years in Indiana when that team kind of went south after going to back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals. Carmelo, I mean, that was as soul-sucking as 6.5 years you're going to get in New York City and playing for the Knicks. There's a motivation there. And while I think it's going to take some time for them to figure out how they slip into roles on that team, the belief, or at least the hope, in Oklahoma City is that, you know, these guys get on the same page by midseason, they build some momentum, and that they can become, with all their offensive firepower, a real threat to Golden State in the West.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. I mean, is there really anyone, not just in the West, but across the league, that can challenge that team?
I don't think so. I mean, could somebody win a game, 2 games in a series? But the idea that there's a team out there that can beat a healthy Golden State over 4 out of 7 just seems so improbable. You watch the way Cleveland played in the finals. Cleveland was a super team in their own right at that point. I mean, they were really good and probably won't get the credit they deserve for the type of team that they had. But, you know, we saw them steamroll everybody in the Eastern Conference, go, 16-1 in the conference playoffs. And then they go into a series against Golden State, and they play great basketball. The final 3 games of that series was as well as Cleveland has possibly played, and they only won 1 game out of that mix. That just speaks to just how good that Golden State was in this postseason. So, you know, unless somebody gets hurt, and it might even take 2 players on that Warriors team to actually get hurt, I just have a hard time seeing anybody take 4 out of 7 from them.
Yeah, it does feel like everybody's sort of playing for the runner-up trophy in the NBA at this point. The NBA doesn't obviously exist in a vacuum. The social issues that are taking place in this country are issues that affect NBA players, particularly in a league that is more than 70% African-American. You wrote something on Yahoo Sports about NBA Commissioner Adam Silver sort of taking a stance that he wants the players to stand for the national anthem. He doesn't want to see the type of protests we have seen in the NFL. And what do you think the player response will be to that? And do you anticipate any player testing this and testing Commissioner Silver?
I have not heard either from players or player agents or anything I've read in the press of any player that intends to take a knee. If you're going to look at players that are the most likely to take a knee, J.R. Smith would have been one of them. He says he's not going to do it, but he does says he believes somebody will at some point during the season.
J.R. Smith, the guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, if an NBA player takes a knee, and worse, if the president weighs in on it, I mean, it's Armageddon. It really is, because the NBA, in addition to being 75% black, it also has the highest percentage of an audience that's African-American. 45% of the NBA audience is black. And if the NBA comes down on a player, fines him, suspends him, if Donald Trump gets involved in this as he did with the NFL, it'll make the controversy that the NFL went through look like small potatoes. It really will. That's why, you know, Adam Silver has always been the most progressive commissioner of the four major sports, and he handles these situations as deftly as any commissioner possibly could. The I Can't Breathe situation from Eric Garner, the man that was killed by New York City police officers back in 2014 when players put on the black T-shirts with I Can't Breathe on it, that was technically a rules violation. And Adam Silver said, I'd like to see our players wear their uniforms on the floor. When they didn't, he didn't do anything about it. And the whole thing eventually blew over, and everyone was kind of better off for the reaction from the NBA. There has been this kind of proverbial line in the sand drawn on this issue of kneeling during the national anthem. And if there is a punishment from the NBA for a player that kneels, if it happens, I don't like where the narrative would go. It would suddenly become front page news in the New York Times, a CNN panel every single night. It's just not where the NBA wants to be. And my suggestion for it would be, if it happens, for the NBA just to say, I support our players. For the owner of that team to say, I support our players. What you need to do is to deprive this story of the oxygen that the NFL has given it, that's allowed it to kind of grow and become this fungus that has attached itself to it. I don't know that they're likely to do that. In fact, I think the reverse is probably true. They might fine or suspend a player. But if they want to avoid kind of an all-out culture war in the NBA, supporting the players 100%, regardless of what happens, to me is the only way to go.
Yeah, and they're lucky that Kobe Bryant has retired, because Kobe has come out and said that he would have done it.
If Kobe took a knee, I don't even, and he would, he said in the Hollywood Reporter podcast that he would take a knee, and he was not at all ambiguous about it. If Kobe Bryant, the arguably the most recognizable player at the NBA, the one of the biggest stars at that point, playing for the marquee franchise in the biggest television market, or at least the second biggest television market, I mean, I can't imagine what the aftermath would have been. And you know, look, Chris, the NBA is not afraid to take on political issues. They're players. I mean, Greg Popovich is the most respected guy of player and coach in the NBA, and he just called Donald Trump soulless. So
he called him a soulless coward. Those are the words he used. And people don't know, Popovich went to the Air Force Academy. He was an Air Force intelligence officer, served in the military.
And he's the head coach of USA Basketball. So the whole thing has the potential to be the kind of powder keg that could just explode and consume the narrative around the NBA for months, if not years, to come.
Switching it just back to basketball, if I didn't ask you this question, I think that I would be tar and feathered by Celtics fans. Anthony Davis and the New Orleans Pelicans, what is the situation there? They have DeMarcus Cousins. They signed former Celtics point guard Rajon Rondo, but now he's hurt. It seems like Davis could be the next major NBA star who is asking out of his locale. Do you think Davis is close to leaving New Orleans at all if things don't go well this year, or is this just one of those pipe dreams we see on all sort of the NBA blogs and all the websites dedicated to NBA rumors?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's certainly something that is worthy of a level of speculation. What needs to be kind of understood is that there's nothing that will happen with Anthony Davis until at the very earliest the end of next season. There are some variables there that can't be accounted for at this point. The first is, how did Davis and DeMarcus Cousins play alongside each other? I mean, if they wind up looking like they can pair for the long term, the Pelicans won't hesitate to give DeMarcus Cousins a max-level deal to stick around. If it doesn't work out that way, if Cousins walks at the end of the year, that's something. The other part of it is, will Anthony Davis start to grumble a little bit? I mean, to this point, he's been a good soldier, both publicly and privately, saying that he wanted to be in New Orleans. But if this team goes south and they don't look like they have any direction, you could certainly see Davis take the same tack that Paul George did and start to publicly call for some kind of deal or say that he wants to go somewhere else. If that happens, yeah, I think Boston will be first in line, because even after the deal that the Celtics made and all the deals they made this offseason, they still have as much, if not more, draft capital as any team out there with the Laker pick and the young players they have on their roster. I mean, make no mistake, it'll take the greatest trade package in NBA history to get Anthony Davis out of New Orleans. He'll have 2 years left in his deal after this coming season. He is a mid-20s franchise player. Those guys don't come around every day. But if I'm Boston and I can maintain my core of Irving and Hayward, if I can maintain some level of flexibility, I would make that type of offer for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I know a lot of Celtics fans are hoping that the brow, which is Anthony Davis's nickname, that the brow becomes furrowed and frustrated down in the Big Easy. They would love to see him in a Celtics uniform. He's sort of the holy grail of green team trade options. Going to get you out on this one, Chris. Speaking of green team, you used to be a Celtics ball boy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
8 years on the job.
And what's your fondest memory from your time as a Celtics ball boy? And are there any players or coaches in the league who recognize you from that job?
I think Paul Pierce was the last. You know, Richard Jefferson, no, he's still there. Richard Jefferson was just traded by Cleveland. He consistently reminds me of the times that, and I worked the visiting locker room in those days. He likes to remind me of the two times that the Nets beat the Celtics in the playoffs, and he would pour beer over my head in celebration as that team made the finals. That was not my fondest moment, but I guess I would say the most fun memory stands as that year that Jim O'Brien took over for Rick Pitino, and the following year they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. I didn't get to see the level of success that most Celtics fans and people that were around the team saw. I was there for ML Carr. I was there for Rick Pitino. Those were down years, but
my condolences,
watching that
Chris.
Team, watching that team go to the conference finals with Antoine Walker and a young Paul Pierce, that was a blast. And that team will always have a fondness in my heart.
All right. Well, Chris, we have a fondness for you. Thank you for joining us here on Season Ticket. That's Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports and The Vertical. He's also host of The Chris Mannix Show on NBA Sports Radio. And you also see him on Celtics pre and post game this season on NBC Sports Boston. Chris, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Finally, the cheap seats. Rest is a four-letter word in the NBA. The league has worked assiduously to avoid scenarios where fans show up to see a star player, only to find that he's sitting on the bench in a suit instead of on court in his uniform. NBA coaches with an eye on the big picture have begun resting players who are completely healthy with an eye on preserving them for the playoffs, much to the chagrin of fans and the NBA's TV partners. So starting this season, the league moved up the tip-off of the season 10 days to ensure that for the first time in modern NBA history, no team will have to play four games in five nights. It also reduced the number of back-to-back games and the wear and tear on players. The league clearly isn't taking the rest issue lying down. This year, teams will be prohibited from resting players for high-profile national television games. And if they elect to do that anyway, Commissioner Adam Silver has been authorized by the owners to fine those teams $100,000 or more for violating the resting rules. This should create better basketball for the players and the fans. And finally, NBA coaches can give resting healthy players a rest. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend. And subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Season Ticket is a production of the WBUR iLab and the Boston Globe. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.